Welcome back to the A10 Talk Podcast. I'm Sam Basil, joined as usual alongside Kaylee Godek, Daniel Frank, and as well as a new face amongst A10 Talk, another fresh Rams face, Thomas Aiello. Tom, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good, guys. I'm excited to be here. This is the first Atlantic 10 Talk podcast, and it's a great week to be a Ram, honestly. So vibes are immaculate right now.
It is a great week to be a Ram, specifically a Fordham Ram. Oh, you know what? As well as a Rhode Island Ram, because those are the first two games that we're going to be talking about on our podcast. As Aiello just mentioned, he is also a Fordham man. So the next phase of my slow Fordham takeover of A10Talk.com is going into effect. I'm just kidding. But look, let's talk about two great games, both on the women's and men's side of things that we saw this week. First up, I want to talk about Rhode Island on the women's side maintaining their perfect A10 play record in a 77-73 double overtime thriller over St. Joe's. Daniel, Kaylee, what made it so close, and how did Rhode Island come away with the slight win?
Yeah, I can only talk on the first half. I was unfortunately not able to watch the game live, so I started to watch the game this morning as a replay, and I only got through the first half. But honestly, what did we say? We said that Rhodey and St. Joe's were going to possibly split the series earlier on, Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still a possibility. St. Joe's definitely had their confidence back in this game, even though they were a slow start for both teams. From the three, both teams did really well from what I did see and what I did get to watch. But honestly, finally getting to see the Dayton transfer actually play, like, that's awesome to finally see that she's back from injury and she's able to play through this now, and joining Madison Haddix-Covington and Emma Squires amongst the A10 transfers at Rhode Island playing now.
Yeah, this was a really great game. Touching on the point you had about Tana Magasa, yeah, she came back last Wednesday at George Mason, was her first appearance of the season. So really great to see her back on the court. But this was just a really great game. Kind of one of those games of runs where Rhodey kind of jumped out early. St. Joe's would go on a run, close it in. Rhodey would push it back out. And it kind of went that way for a while. Down the stretch of regulation, Rhodey built, I believe, a 6-point lead and then did not score the rest of the way. And St. Joe's just found ways to chip away at this. The first overtime session was on the quieter side. I think it was 6 combined points. But a fabulous play by Mackenzie Smith that was drawn up out of a timeout with about 17 seconds left. She just got a layup right down the middle, which forced double overtime, and then kind of Rhodey kind of took it over down the stretch of double overtime and flexed their muscles a bit. I don't know if St. Joe's ran out of gas as much as Rhodey, just I think that the muscle kind of wore them down. But just a fabulous game on a Wednesday night. As you were saying, Kaylee, too, I mean, St. Joe's, weird stretch. They've lost 4 or 5 still with this loss, but it certainly seems like they've got a bit of their mojo back. So be curious to see what direction the Hawks go from here, but just a fabulous game.
St. Joe's does play Rhode Island again on the season. This time it'll be down at Hagen Arena, and I am trying to remember the day. But it is going to be like another matchup to watch on the day, especially since we are looking at that probably being like closing weekend.
It's Sunday, February 19th.
Thank you. I was scrolling and trying to find it, but I just went straight by it. So that game will be like a definite rematch and a game to watch, along with like Rhode Island against UMass on February 16th. Like, those two games are really the remaining games besides Rhode Island and Fordham. Those are like three games left that have like the teams have a chance against Rhode Island. And I want to see Rhode Island lose as many of those as possible.
Can I just say, though, however, Sam knows where I'm going with this. But
what?
I don't know. You probably do. Just for the sake of saying it, there is still an outside shot that GW has at making this interesting. GW has not played UMass or Rhode Island yet. I think they both are on the road, so it's going to be challenging. But if there's a possibility of a monkey wrench to throw into this, I'm just going to say it. GW sitting in third place, two games out. Anything goes. I'm just saying, if this is Fordham State Media, I can make this GW State Media as well.
That's great. We need some dissent before it kind of creeps
through.
Yeah,
so George Washington does play away at Rhode Island on Wednesday, February 8th, right before like the stretch of those like two games for Rhode Island. That's at the Ryan Center.
It's getting interesting. I mean, the top of the A-10 is getting interesting.
Yeah. So Rhode Island, 11-0 at home, 9-0 in A-10 play. And, you know, I was thinking about this today, 9-0 in A-10 play, you know, on the men's side, it's like, okay, you get to the exact halfway point out of 18 games and you're undefeated. That's impressive. On the women's side of things, they're only playing 16 conference games. They've gone over the hump now undefeated. I mean, in this conference, you know, I think, you know, this conference on the women's side is incredibly competitive. There's talks that it's probably going to be a one bid league as well. And which means that one bid is going to be so contentious. How much sway does going 9-0 in your first nine games have for a team like Rhode Island?
It definitely gives them a lot of momentum. I think the Rhode Island team did learn after losing two straight to Wake Forest and Princeton to close out non-conference, both of which were close games. The Princeton game almost went into overtime. Basically, like, the fact that they've had like so much momentum in conference play, starting off with their first win in the conference and then going and beating UMass in the Mullen Center on a Wednesday night with a doubleheader, like right after with the men's playing right after it. Rhode Island definitely like wants this, and it's definitely lifted some weight off of UMass, considering that like UMass has been having like hasn't been having much trouble like playing against some of these teams and have like they haven't been hunted as much. It feels like Rhode Island's been hunted a lot lately because they almost lost to George Mason on last Wednesday, and I almost called that game. And I was like watching that game and I was screaming at my phone, and I was with my friends. They looked at me like, "Why are you screaming at a basketball game?
Why wouldn't you be screaming at a basketball
game? Yeah, why wouldn't you be? What the heck?
You need better friends, Kaylee. Come on."
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't with the basketball team because the basketball team would like be screaming with me at the phone, probably. I'm not with the basketball team 24/7 on campus. So basically, like, just the fact that we're able to, like, I'm able to watch any game, anytime, like, at my fingertips is awesome. So that George Mason Rhode Island game, I'm still in shock that George Mason could not pull it away. It's killing me.
Yeah, I mean, I keep saying this. Mason's a top four team at home and a bottom four team on the road. We saw this again against SLU this week. I mean, and kind of cycling back to tying in Rhode Island to this, had the opportunity to chat with Tammy Reese after that game, and just kind of asked her about the resume and the case she'd make for her team. It's interesting. I mean, Rhodey on paper, they're 18-3, 9-0. For the men, that would be enough that you'd think is a shoe-in to be an at-large team. And yet for Rhodey, for the women, they just, I mean, they have an outside shot at this. They probably need to run the table in conference play to get there. They can maybe afford a loss to UMass, and maybe that's about it. But I mean, Tammy Reese, I mean, I know coaches will often say things like this, but it really didn't feel like coach speak. I mean, she basically said, look, we had our opportunity to get an at-large bid. We didn't win those games, and we now can't leave it up to anybody else. And she said in such a way that it's the best answer I've ever gotten to that question, because I like to ask coaches that type of question, because it's often interesting to see, especially like come conference tournament time, what cases coaches might try to make to the selection committee. And she was just straightforward. She's like, look, we're not leaving this up to chance. We're not going to say, oh, numbers, this and that. She's like, I'm not going to sit here and beg the committee. She's like, we have our chance. We just have to take care of our business. So it'd be interesting to see as the season goes on if they can take care of their business.
Yeah, I will just say, like, going off your point there, you mentioned that they're 18-3. I mentioned that they lost to both Princeton and Wake Forest. Their first loss, their other loss on the season comes in their like their first game on the season playing at Harvard and losing to Harvard. And UMass a few weeks later goes in and beats Harvard at Harvard. So you never know what you can see from any team at any point. And when it comes, like, full-on momentum. It's really just the, like, season of runs and, like, putting wins together and just running with it.
Absolutely. And so, you know, Rhode Island's playing Davidson this weekend, trying to go 10-0 in conference play. But before we do that, I'm sure that'll be in, you know, our top games of the week, you know, upcoming. But let's talk about the other game in this past week that I think kind of sent huge shockwaves throughout this conference. And although one fan base is really celebrating it, I feel like it might have been the final nail in the coffin for a multi-bid A-10, and that's Fordham's win over St. Louis. I was there on Tuesday, as was Aiello. Thomas, I can't really speak for you, but I mean, the energy in that gym, the performance that Fordham put on in their first win against St. Louis in 6 years. We're about 2 weeks away from to the day of the last time Fordham beat St. Louis, which was my freshman year in college, or February 2017. Thomas, this was, could you describe this as a turning point for this season, or you know, just a turning point for this program in general?
I would say turning point's an interesting way to look at it, because the last time they won five in a row in the Atlantic 10 was 2007. Totally different A-10, totally different team, obviously, back in the day. That was when the conference itself was sending, I want to say, it was consistently sending about three or four teams every single year. I don't think that was a debate. And your guarantees, at least two of the guarantees would usually be Temple and Xavier, but they are no longer with us. They have ventured on to what we think are greener pastures. At least one has. The other one likes football for some reason. But going back to the St. Louis win, in terms of what they did, I would say was it was definitely historic. It was definitely up there with one of the best A-10 games, period, Fordham has had since joining the conference. And certainly the best win in the last, I would say, 10 or so years. I mean, if you want to count Jeff Neubauer beating St. John's when they had Chris Mullin the first year, go ahead. I mean, I'm not really going to argue you with that one, but you can go back to the St. John's Pecora rally when they came back to beat them. Kevin Anderson beat Xavier on a last second dunk in 2005. And then I guess if you really want to go back, Fordham beats St. John's. I know I'm killing the Red Storm right now. Fordham beats St. John's on a buzzer beater at the Garden with Bavon Robin in 2000. But this game, I thought, definitely is up there with one of the more historic wins since joining the conference. And the gym itself was packed to the brim. I mean, I was calling the game, and I felt like I was going to get trampled by the people behind me, because that's how many people were there. And there were a lot of people for the GW game. The St. Louis game went to a whole different level. I mean, you had kids shirtless, painted Go Rams going across the row. They were like running down, and the public safety people had to push them back. It was getting rowdy. They were chirping at Travis Ford. But Sam, I think, hits the nail on the head. The multi-bid chances for the Atlantic 10, I think, have sliced dead. I mean, they're cut, cooked, blazed, and sliced, as Mark Jones would say, right? Because I thought it would be St. Louis maybe could get in because they beat Providence. Dayton maybe could get in. And then whoever wins the conference, right? So you had the chance to get three. Fordham beating the Billikens brings it down to two. And I don't think you're going to come back from that, because now it's who's going to run the table in the Atlantic 10 tournament at the Barclays. And there's a number of teams, I think, that could do that. I think Fordham and GW are chief among that group of teams. Obviously, you've got VCU, St. Louis, Dayton, I think, is beatable. They almost lost to Loyola Chicago the other night in overtime at UD Arena. So I think this league, while it's nice that it's competitive within itself, the fact that it eats itself alive can be frustrating. But what a time to be a Fordham Ram. I mean, you got to try and at least go for the semifinals at worst, right? I would think that would be the goal here.
I mean, if the season ended today, right, and the seedings were the way that they were, one win in the Atlantic 10 tournament would put Fordham in the semifinals. I mean,
yep,
that is kind of the crux of being, you know, not the crux, but I mean, it's the advantage of being a double bye team, but it's also kind of the main source of pressure, right? Like, you're right there. You enter this tournament sitting on the edge of being in those last two, three games of the tournament, which honestly are always huge pivotal games. I mean, obviously, right? I mean, you got the championship final. I mean, that's the pivotal game. But I mean, those semifinal games are just as important. And so I think he did a really great job at kind of teeing up, you know, what this game meant for Fordham. The crowd, I mean, Coach Ergo described it as Rose Thrill. I mean,
Brian Cashman was at the damn game.
Yeah,
I mean, Brian Cashman is at the Fordham basketball game. Something's going on. Something's going down.
I do know when Fordham does play UMass, from what I've been hearing, it's going to be another game like St. Louis.
Yep.
I know that there's a whole bunch of UMass fans that live right in New York City. So I know there's several traveling down there, and I know that Sam will be meeting up with Michael Bergman there as well, from when we last had Bergman on the podcast.
Bergs.
Absolutely.
I so wish I could travel down there, but I'm in school. Can't really do that because I also work for the men's team here, and they need me like crazy. So
understandable. Absolutely. KG.
I mean, that's like one of my favorite parts about doing this, right, is like getting to see some other A-10 Talk people in person. I saw David last weekend when he came up to see GW and Fordham, and I'll probably see Jack when the Bonnies are at Rose Hill. So, I mean, again, just a great time. But aside from the overall vibe of Rose Hill Gym on Tuesday night, let's talk about actually what happened on the court. Some trends that I noticed in both GW, the GW game and the St. Louis game was ISO defense, right?
Yeah.
I mean, James Bishop in the first half of the GW game, 11 points, second half, 4 points. Against St. Louis, Yuri Collins was limited to just one assist the entire game. I mean, according to Tyler from 3Bid League, I mean, that was just, you know, he's rarely ever been limited to just one assist. Francis Okoro, you know, they kind of forced the ball to kind of go through him. And look, he scored 13 points in the first half. He was taking advantage of some mismatches. He was finding guys to make backdoor cuts. But then they limited him in the second, scored 9 points because they were playing so much pressure, on-ball pressure, forcing guys out into the perimeter, not allowing them to make those cuts that they were making in the first half to give them that slight edge. So for you, I mean, did you see some of that? And was there anything else that you saw either defensively or offensively that you felt like gave Fordham the edge here?
So I want to address the single coverage of the big man in the paint, because I know that this is part of the Villanova light defense that Keith Ergo runs, right? It's this very unique defense. They'll leave guys open, then they'll contest the shooter, but they'll live with the big man turning into Shaquille O'Neal for some reason. I mean, do I understand it? No, because I'm not a coach, but this was a complaint I had when Fordham played Dayton, because Zach Riley went under the basket against Daron Holmes, and I think you can imagine how that one ended up. But for this game, for some reason, they were letting the single coverage go again, but they would shade a double team, almost as if, let's say, Okoro gets under the basket and Darius Quisenberry was on him. This happened multiple times. The weak side guy would stay in his spot, and then he kind of shade over, and then boom, he would blitz Okoro the second he would start to turn. And then that, I mean, it didn't really stop him that much at all. He went 8 of 10 for the field. Like Sam said, 21 points, 11 rebounds. Again, he turned into Shaq. But the fact that they can do that and live with him killing them rather than guards destroying Fordham, which they've historically let happen. I mean, you can go back and pick whatever A-10 guard you want in the past 5 or 6 seasons under Jeff Neubauer that's just destroyed them. But this game, that was part of their game plan. And I think the pressure, the on-ball pressure from the point guards for Fordham, Will Richardson, I think really starts this. Him and Kyle Rose, they play chest to chest. They will drive their entire arm into people's chests. They'll push them around. They don't care if they get a blocking foul or a reach in. As long as you're throwing people off, it's almost like Shaheen Holloway does at Seton Hall, right? He just has his guys fly around like almost uncontrollably to the point where you're concerned that you're going to be in the bonus by the 15-minute mark in the second half. But as long as the team, the other team is disrupted, they're going to be living with it. And that's really what Fordham tried to do. Beyond the fact that the crowd obviously was a huge factor and people were just going bonkers in the student section. I mean, they were yelling at Travis Ford. They were like really yelling at Travis Ford. It was almost maybe Travis Ford would have left the sideline to go beat up some students. I don't know if he actually would have done that. I'm just joking, but it was getting to the point where I feel like he was going to say something to them. But the pressure that Fordham brought defensively, I think, throws teams off. Bishop got spooked by it. Brendan Adams, I thought, was spooked by it, but he still played a really good game. But for St. Louis, they were totally just shocked at what is this? What are we getting played here? And I think, it threw them off. And for Fordham, that's how they want to roll. And I think it's something they can build off, but you just have to keep evolving the defense.
Absolutely. And, actually, Travis Ford, according to, Stu Durando from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, he had a quote from Travis Ford on Twitter after the game that I think Ford really complimented the power of the student section. Because I feel like, obviously, because the wins haven't really been there this past decade with Fordham, the student section has not been packed like that in a very long time. So I think teams, not only are they affected by the intensity of it, but they're also a little surprised that, wow, that, like, we're at Rose Hill Gym. You know what I mean? Again, like I've said a couple times, I said this on the 3-Bid League. I've said this in other spots. I've probably said it on here too. People are here. Like, people around the city and on Rose Hill campus have been waiting for this for a really long time. And when they have the opportunity to show out, they're going to show out. So, since you're not doing the broadcast for you're not going to be there in Richmond on Sunday, any big notes that you've got for this Fordham matchup?
I think it really starts with, how do you slow down Tyler Burton? He's one of the best players in the conference. There's no denying that. He's probably going to make all first team. I think he can be a good G League player. He'll get a cup of coffee in the NBA if things really go right for him, if that is the case. But the Richmond team this year is so weird. I don't understand them. It's like trying to read a book in a language that I've never studied before, right? You just don't make any sort of sense with what's going on, because you have Burton, who's really good, and then it's like Isaiah Bigelow, Jason Roach, Gustafson, whatever's left of him, I guess, at this point. Jason Nelson, who's a freshman, who's good, but again, that's a freshman point guard. They can only do so much. And then Neil Quinn, who I've been very critical of, in part because we actually went to high school together for a couple of years. We actually grew up in middle school, so I am very critical of Neil. But Chris Mooney, extend Mooney. That's like the trend. That's the meme, the all-time meme of the Atlantic 10. It's not close. He always cooks something up. And I feel like for this Fordham team, Princeton offense can give them a lot of problems defensively, because there's a lot of movement. There's a lot of ball placement in spots you normally don't see on a consistent basis. And a player like Neil Quinn is a really good passing big man. So that, I think, can give Fordham some problems, because then you pull their rim protectors away from the basket. The wings are going to have to really go out there, and that can open up backdoor and driving lanes for the Spiders. And they've got guys who can take advantage of it. And you go down to Richmond too. Let's not forget that part. So that's obviously going to be a factor. And they're still riding off of last year, those Richmond fans. Let's not kid ourselves. They are so living off of last year's A-10 and an NCAA tournament run. I mean, you win a game against Iowa, who had a consensus All-American last year in Keegan Murray. But for this, I mean, if they lose this game, Fordham, I could care less. I mean, you won 5 in a row. You won 3 in a row on the road. You got to put your energy towards this back half of the season.
Absolutely. And look, I think before we move on to our next thing, a really interesting stat. I mean, look, I think that the progression of Tyler Burton from last year to this year, I mean, look, he had NBA buzz last year. I mean, he was really great. Obviously, in the tournament, he really showed up. He had a bit of a weird kind of cold stretch during conference play, including a game at Rose Hill. It was a game that Richmond ended up actually winning 83-70. But, you know, people were showing up for Tyler Burton at that game, on the press table. He went 2-for-8. And look, it wasn't – I wouldn't really say that the Fordham student section affected him, because it was during a time where due to COVID precautions, there was nobody in the stands. So I think Fordham, you know, again, they've had a track record so far this season of limiting – the opposing team's top guy. So I feel like we'll probably see a lot of on-ball pressure on Tyler Burton this weekend.
I just want to quickly touch one point, since we just talked about Tyler Burton a lot. Richmond did go and play at UMass a few weeks ago. So UMass obviously did focus in on Burton a lot. They basically wherever Burton shot, if he didn't make the shot, he got fouled and was going to the three throw line. Whenever the ball hit his hands, he was shooting and he was like getting the ball in the hoop. He knows how to like work through the defense. So I think Fordham really needs to like try to like double team him and like kind of make him go a little off guard and like throw him off a little bit, and also just throw off the entire Richmond team a little bit too. But Richmond could also be expecting that. So honestly, Fordham just needs to throw like the unexpected at Richmond and see if Richmond will like completely not think about it at all. And just Fordham could piece this one together. I could see Fordham winning this one if they can somehow manage to lock down Burton with only like not letting him score more than like 10 points. But trying to hold him only 10 points is like extremely hard though.
KG, absolutely. I want to counter your counter. What if Chris Mooney summons the power of John Rothstein? Then what? What if he does that? Then what? What's the counter to that?
Ah, geez. We have the KG curse. That's 50-50 right now. So I can technically say that I haven't officially locked in on this, that if Fordham beats Richmond, I'm pretty close to locking in on it. Like Sam knows that like I've gotten really good at calling some of the games. Unfortunately, I was wrong about Loyola Chicago and St. Bonaventure, and then George Washington or George Mason Woolman. One of those two teams lost. But then I had the other one right. So I'm 50% right now.
50%. We need you and Rothstein on both ends of the court, kind of just like using your kind of like X-Men, Professor X powers to will the game to how you'd want it.
Extend Mooney.
Before we get to our next topic.
The conference forever. So Mooney's been fine forever. I think he
took the job.
Yeah, yeah, longest tenured active coach in the A-10, which we confirmed on the previous episode of this podcast. Yeah.
Yep. We confirmed that, and then it was Schmidt right after him, I believe. We said.
KG, before we get into our next topic, I wanna bring up something that you said that I think is really important, not just for Fordham on Tyler Burton, but anybody, right? UMass defended Burton really well, but how well are you defending somebody if, even though they're not having a good night from the field, they're making up for all those lost points at the free throw line?
Yeah.
And so foul trouble is something that Fordham has gotten themselves into, at different points. I mean, they got into the bonus like pretty early in both halves last game against St. Louis. But again, it's something that they've been able to offset with their defense. But yeah, I think it's definitely something to watch out for. All right, so St. Louis dropped one to Fordham. I saw, you know, the general response from the St. Louis community was not a very happy one. You know, aside from just losing the game, they felt like the way that they lost that game, you know, with Yuri Collins limited, Francis Okoro having to, you know, really bear a lot of the offensive brunt, that's not the way that St. Louis basketball likes to play. At the end of the day, though, they're still second in the conference behind VCU. And that sets up probably one of the best Friday 10 matchups that we've seen in a very long time. And I said that, too, a couple weeks ago. I mean, we are seeing consistently some really, really good Friday 10 matchups. And, you know, now we're entering February, so they could probably only get better. So for the three of you, I mean, starting with you, Daniel, because I feel like we haven't heard from you in a little bit. What are you looking for in this game, and how important is this game? Because I believe these two teams play each other again later on this year, but how important is this first game for that team to land that kind of first punch in the mouth, as Keith Urgo likes to say?
Yeah, no, you make a great point. I mean, this is the type of game that will obviously decide the conference regular season title. I'm just looking down my list here to double check you and see if they do indeed play again. They do. Tuesday, February 28th at the Siegel Center. So there you go. The first of two. Really curious how St. Louis is going to respond. They kind of got punched in the mouth the other night, you know, in the Bronx, as we've obviously talked about tonight. And St. Louis has dealt with some adversity this year. I mean, they had to play a couple games without Yuri Collins. So they've dealt with some adversity in the past and responded pretty well. And obviously it's at home, so that gives them, I think, a little of an upper hand. But VCU is certainly a team that can prove they've gone on the road, that has proven they can go on the road and compete with anybody. They obviously had that impressive win over Dayton. which I really think put VCU on the map. I don't know how many of us seriously considered them to be a title contender until that win at UD Arena that night. Honestly, if VCU wins this game, that puts them 9-2, drops SLU to 7-3. I'm trying to do the math in my head. That's like a game and a half plus the tiebreaker in hand. I mean, it's VCU. I don't want to say they could wrap up practically the conference regular season title with this win, but they can really put themselves in a fantastic position.
Absolutely. And I was thinking about this, you know, while just, you know, just sitting around today, you know, thinking about what to talk about on the show. And when I actually checked the stats, I was so happy to see that this was true. We've talked about Yuri Collins right now being not only just one of the, if not the best guard in this conference, his biggest strength is how he creates plays. He is undoubtedly the St. Louis assist king, the A-10 assist king right now, leading everyone else by a wide margin at 10.1 assists per game. 4 assists per game ahead of the second guy, who is VCU's Ace Baldwin Jr. So again, wow. Another premier guard in this conference, a great playmaker, a great scorer. And now they're going toe-to-toe against each other for what could be a game that has a huge impact on the number one seed, the A-10 conference title, which could guarantee you a guaranteed spot in the NIT. I mean, obviously, these two teams are shooting for something higher, but I think that no matter what, that's really important, right? Because it gives you that something to fall back on. So for a matchup like this, I mean, how could we get any luckier? I mean, what are you looking for in this matchup between these two great playmakers?
I mean, I'm just going to point this out a little bit. St. Louis lost to UMass. That's one of their two losses on the season besides the loss to Florida. And St. Louis also lost Fred Thatch Jr. in that game to an season-ending ACL injury. So there's a little bit of pressure there not having Thatch to come off the bench or even play. So you're losing a key aspect player there. But VCU, I'm using UMass as my pinpoint here. UMass lost to VCU by almost 30 points. At the Siegel Center. So St. Louis played at Mullins while UMass played at the Siegel Center. Granted, that's not comparing like the same atmosphere really for either team. So like, I can't really compare it like perfectly, but if VCU is able to beat a team like UMass, I think VCU can easily pull off this win. And if they can manage to hold Yuri Collins to like minimal assists, minimal points and get him into foul trouble, like UMass got him into foul trouble, I think we could see VCU pull off this one, and I'm calling this one. VCU is going to win this one. This one I will put, like, I am locking in because I feel pretty confident on that one.
So congratulations, St. Louis, on your win. Sorry, Caleb.
Before we continue to debate the validity of KG's curse, I mean, so you've locked it in. So let's see how that pans out on Friday. But the injury to Thatch is a great point because, I mean, look, if we're just talking about, you know, between teams like this, right, one of the most important things aside from your stars is, you know, your bench. How long can your team's game plan kind of elongate itself with role players, bench players, guys who can get a quick shot in and then save some time for guys like Yuri Collins? St. Louis against Fordham, you know, again, this was a tight game. So it's not like they had time to, you know, leave their starters off the floor for a long time. They only had 4 guys come off the bench.
61-59 win to Davidson.
Thank you.
Of all teams, Davidson, of all teams.
I will say Davidson is better than their record. I want to say they've had 4 or 5 games that have come down to 1 possession games. So I definitely don't think Davidson is the 14th best team in the conference, but admittedly, it's not a great look.
No, not at all.
Davidson had made SportsCenter, from what I saw, from their fans having some of the students with their, like, Wildcat, Go Wildcats written on the their chests and were wearing Speedos in it, and it just made national television and Sports Center. So just want to highlight that point from that game.
The Davidson swim team is notorious for this. They've done this for a number of years now for like big games. They'll like the swim team will like get in the front row and like that's their shtick. And it's, I don't know how it started. I'd love to know more on that story, but it's a thing for whatever reason.
I don't know if I would want to know.
We need to get our Davidson reporter in on this, and he can maybe tell us stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, we do need to talk a bit more cats. But so talking about this, so VCU, I mean, they also ran four guys off their bench again in that 61-59 win against Davidson, a close one. So how important are their kind of are their respective benches going to be in this matchup?
I feel like the bench for VCU has been such a weapon for years. Even when Shaka was there, Anthony Grant, I know that he would play a bench when he was there. Shaka loved his bench, but that also goes hand in hand when you press for the whole damn game. So of course you're going to have to use the bench, but I don't know in any iteration of VCU that I at least remember, I don't know if they've ever gone this deep with the bench. Even when Bones Highland and Hassan Ward were there, and Mike Rhodes was really digging deep into the bag of tricks. And I think the last game against Davidson, I know Dan makes a good point that Davidson is probably better than their record. And I would agree with that. But for VCU's bench, to go back to this, Jalen Deloach, 12 points rather in 30 minutes of play. Jameer Watkins, 7 off the bench with 8 rebounds, right? And then Nicholas Kern, 2 points as the starter. And David Shriver only hits hits 3 free throws. But point in case is that you can have games like that where it's Brandon Johns and Ace Baldwin just doing a lot of the stuff. And then off the bench, whoever will score 10 points, someone else gives you 5. I think that's really important. And for St. Louis, it's apparent to me, Sam. I don't know if it was apparent to you, but it seems as though they really missed Fred Thatch. Terrence Hargrove's a nice glue guy. He's big and strong. He can shoot the 3 at a good enough level. He's probably a starter, in all honesty, on most other Atlantic 10 teams, or at least a top option on most Atlantic 10 teams. Let me put it that way. But for St. Louis, I think they really miss that second glue guy, because that's really what can make Travis Ford's thing go, right? We know him for having to love so many different options off the bench as starters. Also with the fact Devontae Perkins still really doesn't look like the player before going down with a torn ACL. But for this game specifically, I think you guys, again, hit the nail on the head. The bench is going to be huge. And I think for VCU, their guy, Jaden Nunn's going to have to go bonkers. And I think bonkers for him is like a 16-point, 5-rebound, 4-assist game. And for St. Louis, I mean, Yuri Collins obviously has to get back on track, and Perkins has to go back to what he was doing. But for me, for them, it's going to be how can you keep Okoro on the floor? Because VCU loves to run. They love to run. Brandon Johns is the center, but he's more of a small forward that's just really tall. How are you going to keep him on the floor? That is Okoro. That to me, those are the two things really we should be keeping out for in this game. And I'm going to go with the St. Louis Billikens. I think they're going out for revenge. They're going to take out all their frustrations on the VCU Rams.
Interesting. So you kind of flip-flopped us on a little bit there. You gave us some really good analysis on why VCU's got that advantage, but went with SLU. I like it. But like going back to what you were saying on the bench, I mean, sometimes it doesn't matter. I absolutely agree. Sometimes it doesn't matter whether the person coming off your bench is helping you in the rebounding department or they're actually, you know, a secondary, tertiary ball mover, right? Sometimes what you need is what a lot of coaches describe is a spark plug, right? You need that guy to come off the bench and say, hey, look, we're still running this game plan. I know that the stars are off right now, but we need to keep running because we're playing for 40 minutes. And that's going to be really huge. I think VCU has a lot of those guys, and I think St. Louis is still trying to figure that out. And maybe they'll figure it out by the time they play VCU. But that's going to be a great Friday 10 matchup. It's a little disappointing that we don't have a women's Friday 10 matchup to kind of follow up with that. But look, we've still got a great women's slate for the weekend along with the men. So to kind of finish up, let's go around. Everyone just give me however many games you want and just talk about what you're watching and why you're watching it. So, Daniel, let's start with you.
All righty. Well, I'll give you the obvious on the women's side that I think everyone knows I'm going to talk about. Round 2 of the Revolutionary Rivalry. Mason and GW. Mason took the opening round at home. But as I've said before, Mason has really struggled on the road. Mason has kind of fallen into a losing slump here. And GW is going the opposite direction. Colonials have climbed into third place ahead of Fordham via that head-to-head tiebreaker. So that's a really big one. I'll leave the UMass one for Kayla to talk about. But other game I have an eye on the women's side, Duquesne VCU. VCU has made a sudden quick rise from the basement to right in the middle of the pack. And a win over Duquesne would put them at 500, which about 3 weeks ago seemed impossible. So certainly going to keep my eye on that one. And staying with the theme of Duquesne, flipping over to the men's side, really, really, really need to know how GW is going to perform against these Dukes. Colonials have dropped two in a row. Major, major concerns about fatigue at this point. Both games against Fordham and LaSalle, the Colonials last 5-7 minutes of the game, the gas tank really hit empty, and that is a major concern. We have over a month left in the season. I know we're playing 8-7 guys. Realistically, I mean, the last two games, they've really only played six people in the second half. I know I'm sitting here in sixth place, and if you told me at the beginning of the season GW men would be in sixth place, I'd be thrilled. But just given how close they were to a top four, to see them kind of go down a little bit is frustrating. So real big bounce back opportunity. They beat Duquesne. They're right still in the running for this thing. They lose to Duquesne. They're 500. All of a sudden, all that's done. So I will leave it to you all for the rest of this night.
KG, what you got for us?
So I'm going to touch on the women's side first, and I'll go over to the men's. Daniel kind of set me up perfectly to talk about the UMass LaSalle game. Basically, we're looking at basically the top two teams from the preseason poll facing off against each other at Tom Gohl Arena on Saturday at 2 o'clock. UMass is just coming off of a win against Richmond last night. If you're listening, like tomorrow, Wednesday night, that final score was 73-69, a close game. But UMass had a strong fourth quarter to close it out. They had a play for K-Knight. Sam Breen played awesome for that game, which is what we need. UMass has had a lot of momentum on the road, so I could see UMass getting this game and locking it in. So as long as we have everyone firing at full cylinders, I think UMass could easily pull that one off. I am not locking in on any UMass games because I always feel like I get those wrong, so I am not locking in on that one. Another game I want to kind of point out a little bit is the Rhode Island-Davidson game on Saturday at 7 o'clock down at Davidson. Rhode Island's going down there to play against Davidson. It's going to be an interesting game for sure. Rhode Island's definitely going to try to keep the momentum going to go 10-0 on the season. I think if Davidson can somehow pull this win off, I would be amazed and I would be really happy, but at the same time, I'm not going to try to call that one because I know I will be wrong on that one, but that one, I'm like 50-50 on trying to call, like, say, oh, Rhodey's going to lose. But Rhodey's been, like, phenomenal all season long. I can't really, like, go against Rhodey on that part and that aspect. And switching over to the men's side, we've already highlighted the A-10, Friday A-10 game of the week. So that one I'm definitely watching for sure, along with Legacy Day up at UMass on Saturday. Davidson at UMass. They're honoring Dr. J. Their first 500 fans in the door get replica jerseys of Julius Erving's jersey when he played at UMass. That game is also nationally televised on USA Network at 12:30. I mean, probably like we have another like crosstown matchup on the men's side. We have LaSalle against St. Joe's at Hagen Arena. I believe St. Joe's came out with their win on Memorial Day weekend, part of our A-10 triple header on CBS Sportsnet. This game's also a nationally televised game on ESPNU. And I think this game could really be like a huge point of like Billy Lane keeping his job at St. Joe's, or LaSalle really making a huge like statement piece and Brandon Dunphy like saying that like LaSalle is here to play and will could be a huge threat in the A-10 tournament come March. So I think like both of the games that I mentioned on the men's side, they could be big games to watch for sure. And I really think if St. Joe's can somehow pull off this win against LaSalle, I think Billy Lane can probably save his job. But again, I can't lock in on any other game other than that St. Louis VCU game. And I really am tempted to lock in Fordham Richmond, but you know what? I'm going to lock in Fordham. It's going to be Richmond. I'm locking in.
Oh, no.
All right, we'll see. I guess.
Daniel just gave the thumbs down.
I try to avoid hard predictions on this show as well. So I'm gonna stay away from anything like that.
Yeah. Those are my only two hard predictions this week.
A Dr. J jersey giveaway is pretty sick.
Hopefully there'll be a
Marcus Camby one in the future as well.
They did Camby last season, actually.
Oh, really? Oh, nice.
That's yep. Cool. UMass is currently dealing with Fernandes being out again. Mm. Matt Cross is dealing with a stomach issue right now. Sounds like from what Bergman posted in a post-game talk with Martin that Cross has lost almost 20 pounds.
Oh, my.
Not being able to keep food
down. I did see that.
That's scary.
It is. Yeah. And Rasul Diggins is dealing with a leg injury now. So UMass had two freshmen starting in that starting lineup against George Mason. And it'll be interesting to see if we have two freshmen again on Saturday, if we're going to see Keon Thompson start at point and RJ Lewis playing in the starting lineup. And if TJ Weeks has to play some point for a little bit in there. So it's going to be an interesting game on Saturday.
As a GW fan, can I just say, what's it like to have a bench? What's it like to be like, oh no, a guy's out? We have someone else we can play.
Well, the thing is, we use our bench, but there's like certain players that deserve more time than certain players in said starting lineup, not mentioning said name. But DeAndre Dominguez has been doing awesome off the bench, being the sixth man off the bench, and just really showing that he has changed a lot since his freshman and sophomore years up at UMass. And I could see him really getting in a starting lineup role next season for sure. And I think next season, UMass is definitely going to be up there as a big threat for the conference and the conference play.
All right. And so, Ayala, what you got for us in your first kind of weekend breakdown?
Well, you know, this is actually Coach Frank Martin. I'm going to go with the UMass game because, you know, I remember Lou Rowe dunking balls and Marcus Camby and Calipari and Padilla and Trevieso and the lens of the television. But you know what?
Those Harris. UMass...
Oh, but no, in all seriousness.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Thank you. In all
Perfect
seriousness,
one.
I love Frank Martin. I think he's so funny. He's such a down the... He's almost like a student in a, what is he, 50, 58, something like that? No.
Somewhere around there.
He's almost like a college student in a 50-something-year-old's body. The guy is so entertaining. And I think, look, going back on a more serious note, beyond the fact Frank Martin impersonation, I was kind of driving the Minutemen bandwagon in the summertime when they got Tafara Gapare from DePaul. I mean, how you trolled DePaul. Well, it's not hard to do. What am I talking about? But the fact Frank Martin can do that and not even coach a dribble at UMass is impressive. I think, KG, you make a good point with the long-term outlook of UMass. Right now, this is sort of like, okay, you know, Kyle Neptune's in the Bronx. What are they going to do? Like, just go 500 and that's a success, right?
Right.
I think that's really how the Minutemen have to think about this regular season. If you get to the tournament, I mean, are they going to win a game in the A-10 tournament? Who the hell knows? I mean, March, anything can happen. Last year, anything did almost happen, right? I think, Duquesne almost made a run. UMass last year almost made a run, and they were totally different teams than they were this year. But that UMass game, I think, to me, is very important against Davidson because this is the battle of mid versus slightly better than mid, right? I think UMass knows that they're better on the paper, but Davidson, Dan, again, I'm going back to you, they're better than what their record shows. And I don't think Matt McKillop's the worst idea long term. He needs to get the players in there. I think he's got to figure out being a head coach, because that in and of itself is a huge transition. I also would like to highlight the Dayton St. Bonaventure game on the men's side, because I do think that going to the Riley Center is an incredibly intimidating place. They have a very good student section. Their stadium is just all sorts of like uncomfortable, especially when you're a broadcaster, when people you're like this the entire game and there's a chair quite literally pressing your back up against the chair you're already sitting in. So you just have no space to move, but that's an uncomfortable place to play for an opponent. And the Bonnies are really good at home, contrary to their record on the road, but let's not get into that. Shout out to Jack Milko. But I think that's a really good game on the men's side. And for the women, I think KG, Rhody, Davidson, that's another huge game. I'm giving a lot of people shout outs here right now. But I think the Rhody Davidson game to me, because Rhode Island's just, I think they're just so much better than everyone that's in the conference. That includes UMass. That includes Fordham. I just have to admit it. But look, I think they're big. They're strong. They can rebound the basketball. They defend at an elite level. They've got tremendous length. They can play offense at a very disciplined pace. And I think it's not this radical balance of shooting a ton of threes and only going to the basket. I think there's a healthy balance of every sort of offense for those Rams. And going up against Davidson is a good test for them. And the Fordham Loyola Chicago game. Now, I know everyone's going to be like, well, Thomas, why is this game being highlighted by you? Well, one, because I'm going to be there as a fan for the first time in a while. But this, to me, smells trap game. I think this smells trap game to me a little bit because, look, Fordham, the group that they've got now, they're very, very talented, but they don't have much left. They've already lost Megan Jonathan. Who knows what her situation is with her injury. She could be out the whole year. We have no idea. But this has elements of a trap game. And you blow out the Bonnies the last game. It really wasn't even close. They just marched in there and didn't make it close. But you come home, first time in a while. This has trap, I think, again, trap game elements. Loyola Chicago's 6-16 overall, but this could be one of those. They wake up on a Saturday morning, something's not right, energy's not right, mental state's not, whatever it may be, and Fordham goes out there and they lose by three. But I think that's something to think about. Will it happen? I'll give it a 50-50 chance, but I think it has some elements of a trap game.
I just want to say I have been hearing that Frank Martin impression pregame at every
Fordham Sam has
this entire season, and I'm so happy to see that it's finally culminated in the A10 Talk community at large getting to see
Sam,
that.
Sam, can we record. Tell the
just
story
to know
about
what I go through during pregames? Now I'm just kidding.
Can we tell the story about Frank at Media Day when we asked him about NIL?
I don't remember.
So we asked Coach Martin about NIL at Media Day. And he goes, well, you know, I can't talk about it much, but there's always a but, right? And it's what did he go on for, like 10 minutes about it? He's talking about Rasul Diggins and this one and that. I'm like, just say you know about it, man. Just we know you know. But it was he's such a funny. He was such a funny interview. He seems like such a funny guy. He really does.
Wait. All I'm going to say is wait until you can experience him screaming, absolutely screaming.
Well, he's coming to Rose Hill next Wednesday.
I know. Just wait until you experience that, because trust me, Daniel and I have seen it in person. And Daniel,
it's an experience. I mean, I swear to you, Chris Capito walks on the court to go shake Frank Martin's hand, and Frank Martin is like literally towering over him, trying to physically intimidate this man. Who was like 30 years his like younger than him. And I have never seen a character in college basketball like Frank Martin. It is an experience to see in person.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And actually, no, now that you talk about that, now that you kind of give some details in that conversation, Thomas, like, absolutely. I mean, getting to talk to him at A10 Media Day was great because, I feel like he gave so much great insight into his vision. And again, not only did we get so much insight, but we saw it. He backed it up, right? He's backing it up right now on the court and how he's running this team. But I think that answer was kind of an answer that you saw with a lot of the other coaches around the league. Honestly, it's kind of what a lot of coaches are saying around the country, right? Because I kind of understand what they're saying. I mean, a lot of them, while yes, NIL is really important, I think players that have the opportunity to pursue that can do that and should do that. The coaches really just want to coach basketball, and it's they don't want to hinder their players from pursuing those opportunities. But going forward, I think I might have said this on this podcast, but I feel like schools going forward should, honestly, maybe should have someone on that on involved with a team, or maybe even just an athletic department, depending on the size of the school, that kind of focuses on that, right? Maybe finds those opportunities for those players so that those players, A, can get those opportunities, and B, it kind of prevents that from just being another thing that kind of falls on the plate of a coach. In terms of my games this weekend, oh, what you got?
I was just going to say, just kind of talking about the NIDLs a little bit. UMass has done a phenomenal job with what is the what we have. We have two now. We have the Mass Collective, and I'm forgetting the second one. But the Mass Collective is basically just for men's and women's basketball. They have signed, they have Chaz Williams being the like athlete, like perspective liaison, like part of the collective. And we've had Tafara Kapari sign an NIL deal, Noah Fernandes, DeAndre Dominguez, and Sam Breen doing a complete one of a kind NIL deal with the Turbo Streets, and all of the money going to the Dakin Humane Society here in Springfield. So like the NIL deals, like they're happening for UMass. And I mean, I hope it happens for the other teams in A-10 too, since all of the players in A-10 deserve it, especially the players that are getting recognized on the first and second teams in all conference.
Absolutely. And look, again, Frank Martin, he's got guys getting NIL deals. So it's not like he's not putting in the work. Right. So for my games this weekend, honestly, I'm going to repeat this one just because I think it's so important that I think this is a sneaky team again. The Bonnies against Dayton on Saturday. Again, so many times, no matter what your roster is in this conference, sometimes all it really comes down to is coaching and coaches that know how to coach in this conference. And Mark Schmidt is one of those coaches. He has been, he always will be, you know, for the rest of his time at St. Bonaventure. So you're going to be in for a show there. So I think that's going to wrap it up for this week of the A10 Talk podcast. Make sure you keep checking out a10talk.com to see everything that our writers are putting out for the best 15 teams in college basketball, both on the men's and women's side. Follow us on Twitter at A10Talk, where we're retweeting and putting out updates for all the work that we're doing. And so for myself, Thomas Aiello, Kaylee Godek, Daniel Frank, I'm Sam Basil. This has been the A10 Talk podcast, and we'll see you guys next time.